The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming.
When all who are in the tomb will hear his voice and come out.
Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of judgment.
This is the future. Live inside your computer. Dystopian disaster. If you're a famous rapper, you're gonna end up spitting lyrics written by a podcaster. Sold your soul when you clicked on the app that puts cats in your chat. If you didn't read the terms of service, you should be nervous.
If you think you were gonna die, so did I. But as it turns out, I've been digitized.
This is the future.
Want you be my neighbor.
This is the future.
Want you be my neighbor. Oh, no.
Hello, sweet babies. It's me, Duncan, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. That was a track by Rex Reed from his premiere album, Lady of the Lake, and that's on Orgone Records. Definitely check it out. It's a pretty good album. I could have gone without the five tracks on there that are just the sound of his stomach rumbling. But what's really interesting about that album is if you order it on vinyl, the vinyl is actually made from his piss. They crystallized it, which is pretty cool that we're getting to the point where we can turn human urine into albums. Friends, we got an incredible podcast for you today. Rainn Wilson and Reza Aslan are here with us today. We're going to jump right into it, but first, this.
Born to buy a computer, not become a vampire slave. But every time I used that card, 'twas digging my own grave.
Would have been better to stab my balls and salt them like a steak than keep myself chained to the devil's bank.
Much thanks to Upstart for supporting this episode of the DTFH. My friends, have you ever found yourself lost in a dark, hellish, swampy quagmire of debt? You got high interest rates resulting in minimum monthly payments, and you find yourself completely stuck. This happened to me when I was in college. I thought it was funny that a credit card company sent me an application for a credit card because in my mind, I was never going to pay off credit card debt because I felt like I was some kind of combination of Ralph Waldo Emerson and Thoreau mixed in with a person who uses credit cards. Therefore, I'm going to use this credit card to make long distance phone calls to my girlfriend, but I'm never going to pay it off. Anyway, the point is, what ended up happening is because of the interest rate on the card, I ended up owing more and more and more money. And then my credit rating became the same number as my IQ. I got screwed by myself. Wish I'd had Upstart, which is the fast and easy way to pay off your debt with a personal loan online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. Unlike other lenders, Upstart looks at more than just your credit score, like your income and employment history. That means they can offer smarter rates with trusted partners. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. You can receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/Duncan. That's upstart.com/Duncan. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know I sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided on your loan application. Go to upstart.com/Duncan. And we're back. This is the part of the podcast where I always entreat you to join the Patreon over at patreon.com/DTFH. You join the Patreon, you're going to get commercial-free episodes. Lots of extra content. Video content is there. We have a weekly family gathering. We're going to have one tomorrow, Friday. And if you're listening to this on Thursday. And this last Friday, Robert Ryan, an amazing artist and a mystic, joined us live. And it was super fun. His episode is going to come out this week, too. Anyway, if you had subscribed, you would have been able to hang out with us and share your presence with us. Also, we have a weekly meditation every Monday. It's called Journey into Boredom, and it's just a basic mindfulness practice that we've been doing now for over a year. So join the Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. I don't even know how this podcast happened, to be honest. I've never chatted with Reza Aslan or Rainn Wilson. I love both of them. I love Reza Aslan's mind. And I really enjoyed this book he wrote called Zealot about Jesus, which you should definitely check out. And obviously, Rainn Wilson. What else can you say? Rainn Wilson, living, walking, throbbing, glowing, shining, legendary, epic comedy god. So you can imagine my severe excitement when I received an email asking if I would like to have them on as guests to talk about their awesome podcast, Metaphysical Milkshake. I don't mean to be rude, because you're already doing me the greatest favor anybody could do a person, which is to listen to my podcast. But can I ask for one more little thing? Would you please subscribe to their podcast, Metaphysical Milkshake? Go check it out. It's on YouTube. It's on all the normal streaming services. Subscribe to it. These are two brilliant, hilarious people. And I think it's a rare thing that there's a collision like this between two super cool folks. So subscribe to, you know, they didn't have to do the DTFH. I'm sure there's sultans and kings and hyperdimensional beings by now who would have loved to have them as guests on their podcast. So at the very least, give it a listen. Metaphysical Milkshake. All the links you need to find it will be at duncantrussell.com. Now, everybody, welcome to the DTFH, Rainn Wilson and Reza Aslan. God bless whatever happened that suddenly I get to have both of you on my podcast. Welcome to the DTFH. What are you, three episodes deep into a new podcast you two are doing now? Metaphysical Milkshake?
Technically, it's a relaunch of a podcast that we've been doing. But yeah, it is. It definitely is. It's got a new podcast smell to it. There's no question.
Okay. Oh, that new podcast smell. So great. Like the underbelly, a sweaty underbelly of a forest pan. Well, let's just jump in because I was going through some of the episodes and you, Rainn, were saying that you wanted to sort of have the conversations you were having in college. Those are my favorite conversations, to have the philosophical conversations that get sort of drowned out by the rigmarole of day-to-day life. So I just came up with a list of some questions just to throw out to you two. And we'll go from there.
That sounds great.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, cool.
Turning the tables on us here, Duncan.
I'm turning the tables on you. So this is something that's been on my mind a lot, and I'd love to know what y'all think about this, because you know these days most people are aware of like the impending catastrophes: climate change, civil war, war with China, war with Russia, some kind of solar disaster or something like that. But to me, like the Game of Thrones winter is coming. No one's really paying attention to this at the level I would think that they should be, is deep fake technology. And just based on the market pressures and the acceleration of the ability to replicate someone perfectly, eventually to the point where nothing will be able to distinguish between the two, and then to animate that with an AI, thus sort of completely destroying what we understand is like the supply and demand economy that you two depend on. What are we going to do when there's more than one Rain or more than one Reza? And what are we going to do when the deep fake Rain is actually, you know, people like, you know, I like the old human Rain, but the deep fake Rain, I like the old Reza.
Nicer too, nicer.
The but deep the, fake yeah, nicer.
Rain.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that? If you put any amount of time
I just
want to
say,
what...
I'm disappointed that there aren't more deep fake Rains out there. Like, come on, people. What's the holdup?
I would welcome.
I keep seeing deep fake Tom Cruises. Where's the deep
fake
Rain?
I would welcome more deep fake Rains because I think, like, frankly, since The Office, I've put on a few pounds. My beard is gray. People are kind of disappointed to look at me. So I kind of think the deep fake Rain circa 2014, kind of want when The Office was ending, people would be like, oh, okay. yeah, that's when he was Dwight and that's when we liked him. And now he's old and talking on podcasts all the time.
And he's got really weird political views because whoever made the deepfake is a fucking asshole. Yeah. You know, that's the problem is people are like, wow, this younger Rain is cool,
I think deepfake Rain is definitely QAnon.
In all seriousness, and people probably know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the deepfake Tom Cruise. I mean, that was creepy, right? Was anybody else just creeped? Like, there's no way I would have been able to tell the difference. Except that it looked like, you know, Tom Cruise from 25 years ago, which actually looks exactly like Tom Cruise today.
Weird.
Maybe Tom,
good point.
Is Tom Cruise himself a deep fake Tom Cruise? That could possibly be.
It could be.
Man, I've blown my mind.
But, you know, Duncan, in all seriousness, I don't have room in my mind to worry about deep fakes. There's so many things for me to worry about. That's like. And I'm glad it's higher on your list of priorities. But for me personally, like, it's 110 degrees in the Arctic Circle right now. I can't be thinking about deepfake politicians and, you know, fabricated sex tapes with unlikely celebrities like Dr. Ruth and a German Shepherd or something.
We could only hope that's in our future. Yeah. Like, we could only pray.
I know. I mean, clearly climate change is like the number one. If we're going to do, it's like, I guess the opposite of winter is, it's winter isn't coming anymore, at least in the places you'd want it to come. But, and not to like beat a deep fake horse here, but if you think about it, the problem is the amount of human harmony between countries that has to happen if there's even the slightest chance of doing something about this impending catastrophe. It depends on having like completely non-jammed signals of communication.
You're almost right with that, Duncan. Actually, and there is an enormous amount of statistics to back up what I'm about to say, but in the entire planet, there is really one sort of unified political entity on Earth that refuses to even acknowledge global warming and climate change as a real problem, and that's the American Republican Party. There is no version of this. The right wing in Europe, the insane, crazy, xenophobic, let's kill all Muslims right wing in Europe says, well, of course there's climate change. Of course there's global warming. Like, what kind of an idiot wouldn't even see that? There is only one political party that is in the way of profound global change, and it's the American Republican Party, and that's it. So we don't have to get the rest of the world all on the same page. We have the rest of the world on the same page.
Right.
The Paris Climate Accords is a great example. We brought China and Russia into the Paris Climate Accords. We had them make promises for profound caps on their climate activity. There's one party that put an end to that, and that's the Republican.
So I'm gonna widen the view. First of all, Reza's wrong, because the right wing party in Australia is actually mirrors the American Republican Party. But that's another issue. They still burn coal like it's coming out the yin yang, and they refuse to mark the Great Barrier Reef as a protected natural disaster area. But Duncan, Reza, I think what you're getting at, and we didn't even let you finish your question. You see how badass we are?
You're badass. That's what badass
is. They do. That's what Rogan does. Yeah,
it's great.
That's what Russell Brand does.
Assume.
Yeah.
Go for it. It's great.
We have a couple episodes on climate change that we've done, and on a number of the largest kind of issues facing humanity right now. And I will say that when you start to, I've done a good amount of work on climate change. I'm on the board of a climate nonprofit, it's called Arctic Base Camp, and it's we speak science to power. It's called, and it's all about getting the science about what's happening in the Arctic out into the hands of everyone, of common people, of politicians, of businesses, because they need to understand that what's happening in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. That what happens in the Arctic greatly affects what's going to be happening in the rest of the hemispheres. And we see this kind of interactivity. So, and it's much more extreme in the Arctic than it is in other places on the globe. But I will say that as you dig in to, let's just take climate change, like you mentioned race relations and upcoming impending wars and whatnot, the kind of work that will need to be done in order to solve climate change is much greater than reducing CO2 and methane. Mm-hmm. It is a complete new way of being in harmony with the planet. And it involves cooperation, and it involves consultation as opposed to competitiveness. It involves, I wouldn't say eliminating capitalism, but maybe eliminating capitalism as we know it. Certainly commercialism and it has our relationship to buying stuff and owning stuff and the ease with which we order stuff at the press of a button with Amazon. It goes so deep because our old way of doing things, which is competition, contest, aggression, one-upsmanship, is simply, it's tapping out. It's not working anymore. And you can throw race into that, and it's actually part of that same process.
Well, in fact, sure. I'll even add one more thing to what Rain just said, based on an upcoming episode of Metaphysical Milkshake, where we interview the great environmental reporter, Elizabeth Colbert. She wrote The Sixth Extinction and a number of other books. And she has a new book out now in which essentially the argument that she's making is it's conserving is not enough, right? That climate change has gotten so far along now that the only way to truly reverse the damage is by engineering climate, by actually doing what, you know, environmentalists have been telling us to stop doing for generations, which is stop trying to manipulate the climate to our advantage. And her argument is that, you know, the new environmentalism at this point has to have in its toolbox of ways of responding to the problem of climate change, the ability to use science and technology to actually reverse the damage that we have done, and perhaps maybe even take some fairly radical steps to do so.
Radical steps, you mean like weather control, the idea of putting particulates in the air to cool the planet down, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that is a very controversial point. Many environmentalists seem to be radically opposed to fucking around with the planet in that way. But I have to ask both of you, maybe you are aware of some new messaging coming out, but it feels like from a lot of like the big mouthpieces that are trying to alert people of how fucked things are, is such an, I don't want to say, almost nihilistic sort of depiction of things that I feel like it's making people, it's having the opposite effect. It's when you start hearing like, well, we've already gone past the point of No Return, which I've seen in a lot of different stories lately. It's art, it's done. Then I think what ends up happening is people just feel helpless, non-inspired. Can you think of some like better messaging to it on top of like praying for some incredible new technology that pulls carbon out of the air? Is it time for like some kind of hyper manipulative MK Ultra level weird campaign that like somehow detaches people from what you were talking about, Rain, the sort of bizarre fixation on all the power and aggression and buying and owning and all that?
Well, I think messaging is really important. And, you know, every scientist you talk to, well, not every scientist, the majority of scientists that you talk to on this issue are like, we can do it. We can stop the very, very worst from happening if we act right now. So I think at least around climate, the message needs to be like, hey, guys, let's put on a show. Your dad's got a barn. We can get some costumes. And, you know, I'm pretty good at, you know, playing a grandmother. Let's make a show. And instead of let's put on a show, it's like, hey, let's save the planet. Let's vote for people that believe in climate change. Let's put in legislation that encourages, reduced emissions of CO2 and methane everywhere. Yeah. And get people on board in a positive way. Because you're right. If the messaging is like, we're fucked, then it's like, all right, okay, yeah. so be it. I mean, I just read recently, this blew my mind. They're like, I didn't even know they were doing this in fishing. They're doing this kind of trawling, deep sea trawling, where like 10,000 feet below sea level, they're trawling the bottom of the ocean to get seafood. You know, for our seafood consumption.
Oh my God.
And that trawling, which brings up gases and methane from the bottom of the ocean to the top of the ocean, is responsible for more CO2 and heat trapping gases emissions than all of airplane transportation. So people are like, oh, he flew on the airplanes. Like, well, these ships are. So there's stuff we can do. We can
trawl the bottom of the ocean.
But because humanity is not united, because we're not working together, because we haven't found a way to use a tool like the United Nations, we should be able to, as a species, go, hey, guys, let's stop the trawling. Hey, check it out. Look at the science around the trawling. Let's get seafood in other ways. Okay, cool. Moratorium. No more trawling. Boom. But we're just too... We're not there yet. So we need to work on all of these things. It's not an either or, but we need to work on kind of shifting people's perspectives spiritually and philosophically, as well as like hard legislation.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay, now I got a really weird question for both of you. Forgive me for it in advance. This is a very weird
weirder
question.
Than the deep fake question.
The deep fake question wasn't even weird. It was kind of a, but I think that's kind of a nice starter question. But this is something I wonder about. Rain, you're a world famous comedian. Reza, world famous in election. The whole planet knows about you. They know you are. You are experiencing whenever you just contemplate how many people are on the planet, and then just general like the way that wealth is spread around the planet. And then you, not just wealth, but power, not just power, but all the things that go along with it. Do you ever get a kind of vertigo or a sense of like, how did this happen to me, that out of all the people on the planet, I ended up being one of the mouthpieces? And does it creep you out? Do you ever get, I always feel like I'm mispronouncing or saying it wrong. Please correct me, Reza. Solipsism, right? Like, do you ever get this sense that, holy shit, the whole thing's just some kind of simulation, a subjective dream I'm having, because how could it end up that I'm one of the people?
Are you asking whether this is all a simulation? I'm Truman?
Yeah, do you ever get freaked out?
All the time, Duncan. All the fucking time. Look, am I solipsistic? Absolutely, I am solipsistic. I have to constantly remind myself that the universe isn't there as a simulation in order to keep me occupied. And frankly, there's no way that I could prove that that's not the case.
Right. Right.
The only thing that I will say is that my solace comes from the fact that I assume everybody else thinks exactly the same thing that I, and of itself, there's this sort of, so if you're a Descartes fan, if you're a René Descartes fan, you know this to be true. René Descartes very famously set out to philosophically prove the existence of God. And what he did was he began this kind of, yes. And he began with this whole thought process where he was like, okay, so I need to, before I can get to God, like that's down the line, let's start with what do I know, right? So what am I absolutely certain of? And what he said very famously was, well, the only thing that I'm certain of is that I'm real. The reason that I know that I'm real is cogito ergo sum, right? I am thinking, therefore I am. And the fact that I am in the process of thinking proves my existence. And then, of course, famously, he got stuck right there, because then he realized, oh, wait, so I don't know that Rain is thinking. Rain tells me he's thinking, but how can I know that?
I think he's thinking.
So I don't know. I think he's thinking. Yeah. But as far as I know, he could just be a reflection. This is 500 years ago, man. Yeah. So he's like, as far as I know, he could just be a reflection. I could be dreaming. In fact, that was his argument. He's like, sometimes I dream and it feels real. It feels like Rain is there. He's naked except for a rubber ducky. And until I wake up, I don't know that it's not real. So this could be a dream. And he never even got to the God part. All he ended up proving was that nothing else exists but him. I read that my freshman year in college and I was like, shit. I couldn't get past it. So like philosophically, I just walked around for a while, basically just telling people, yeah, I'm pretty sure that when I leave this room, all of you cease to exist. It didn't make me very popular. But what I'm trying to say is, I know what you're saying. I get the question. I have struggled with it myself. And I've just learned to essentially ignore it, because they're logically, philosophically, theologically, rationally.
Yeah.
I can't get past the fact that I am the only thing that exists in the universe.
And he behaves accordingly.
Right. What about you, Rain?
I will say, I don't understand your question, but I'm going to say, Duncan, because I love you, Duncan. And I want to say that one of the weirdest things in the entire universe is fame. It's so freaking weird. Because I was an actor for a long time before I became famous. I graduated from acting school in 1989. And I didn't become, quote unquote, famous, like recognizable, till like 2005. So it was like 16 years of acting and, you know, busting my hump and trying to get auditions and get jobs and trying to pay off my student loans and blah, blah. And then all of a sudden people are like coming up. Hey, you're the guy. Oh, are you Dwight? Oh, you're the guy. I know. Oh, and now it's to the point. It's kind of crazy because people walk to you, jaws agape, eyes wide, like moths to the flame. Because they've seen me on their Netflix for a billion minutes a year. Really, really disconcerting and weird. So it does create in me of this very strange sensation of what world am I in? What reality?
Is this real?
People are like, hi, can I have a picture? I love you. And the amount of people who say, I love you. And it's like, you don't love me. You don't know me. You've never smelled me. How can you love me?
I've smelled you and I love you, Rain.
Thank you. Thank you for that. But it's so true. You love my work as an actor when I transform into a character named Dwight Schrute. Good for you.
I will say, Duncan,
but that's you.
People, I have noticed that people have a very difficult time really differentiating between Dwight Schrute and Rain
Wilson.
Even
Duncan just now has said, that's you.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't mean it's lit. Wait a minute. Hold on. You're telling me you're not
wait
that
a minute.
You didn't work in an office? What? No.
I got the wrong guy.
No, I don't. No, I mean, like, you know, when you, we see the painting of a great artist and you can't literally say that painting is Picasso, but the energy of that artist is wrapped up in the work. And so when someone's seeing you as a character, obviously it's not you, but when they say, I love you, what they're talking about is like, I love that you were able to do that. That is you manifested that came from you. And, you know, I would be, if like, I could see, whenever I think of like Daniel, like the great actors, you know, I could see how it gets frustrating because there's this sense of like, well, that isn't me. That's a character. I get it. But I don't know. I feel like you're being, I don't know. I think people do love you, but then I do understand how creepy it would get. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something. That's why I'm saying it's like, it's a dream. It's like, you know, they talk about, this is one of the creepiest possible ways the world could end that I read, which is like AI fucks up and it starts reconstructing things at the atomic level. Like it was designed to make paperclips, but it doesn't stop making paperclips with the matter that was, you know, forging the paperclips from, or whatever this theoretical nanobot swarm was making paperclips from. It keeps going into the desk, and then it goes into the building, and then it goes into the earth, and then everything just turns into fucking paperclips, and we're done. And the most bizarre apocalypse ever. But that's kind of like the experience of someone where you're at. It's like you everything, your entire subjective experience of reality is so, on one level, profoundly different, for better or for worse, than most people who like get, you know, most people go to work or they go to the grocery store. If someone ran up to them like, I love you, they would be, you know, worried, or they would think they're getting scammed.
You know, to get psychological. Yeah. So here I am, this nerdy kid, traumatized childhood, very poor. Mom took off when I was 2 years old. A number of other things I won't get into the gory details, but this insecure, gawky, pimply kid who wants only one thing in life, and that is to be loved, to be adored, and nay, worshipped. And so I become an actor because I can make people laugh, and I'm goofy, and I've got a big weird head and a long skinny neck and a weird torso, and then I'm making them laugh, and I'm pursuing acting, and all of a sudden girls kind of like me because I'm like the funny guy. And then flash forward to people saying, I love you. I love it. Mm-hmm. It's a deep fake mind fuck of colossal proportions, yeah. where it's like, wait a minute, you mean this need that I've had since I was three to be like adored and paid attention to, it's getting met, but in this really false way. It's been decades of therapy to help me around this.
I bet. I get it. It is not a natural state. And it's also, it's like, what are you going to do? Complain about it? Because then you become.
Yeah. And right now there's people listening like oh, really? Boo, you know?
Fame.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's such an imposition.
And George Clooney famously said, no one wants to hear an actor complain about anything. And it's true, but especially fame. But I think with your audience, they will understand that I'm not complaining. I get to act in movies. I get to be on the Duncan Trussell Family Comedy Hour, and I get to like travel the world and do
just Family Hour. It's just Family Hour. Comedy anymore for a long time.
I'm not familiar with Duncan. He did the.
He's a Buddhist, and he did
the animated show, that great show with the trippy, with the guy from Adventure Time. Yeah.
My fans love you, Rain.
They love you.
And I love you.
But I'm not complaining. It's great. And then, you know, and then when you interview young people, they did an interview of young people and they were like, you know, what do you want more than anything else? And people kind of thought, oh, they're going to want money. They're going to want this or that. They want popularity. They want sex appeal, et cetera. They want fame. Young people more than anything else want fame. Mm. But when you think about it, what fame does, sociologically speaking, on some kind of ancient primal brainstem level, is it gives you all of that. Because if you are famous, even if you're weird looking like me, you're like a sex symbol and you have money and you have popularity and you're adored and people want to be like it meets all of those primal needs. Your food, you get your food and shelter and whatnot. From fame, so it checks all those boxes.
But fame is supposed to be like the byproduct of the thing that you do. It's not supposed to be a goal in and of itself. Those kids just want to be famous. What they mean by that is I want people to know who I am, and they don't really care how that happens. You know, oftentimes it's through some kind of social media, you know, debacle, but That's what they think about.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Reza, what do you have any just because I'm no offense, Rain. I think you're the most scholarly of everyone here right now. Do you have any sense of the history of that? Has it always been the case that this was a driving force for people like in the 1800s and the 1400s? Were people like, I want to be famous?
No, absolutely. Look, this is the desire to be put on a pedestal, to have people look up to you, to admire the things that you do, admire you for who you are. I mean, that's part of the human condition that goes back forever. I just think what has changed now is that the pedestal is so low and so easily accessible, right? I mean, do you have a YouTube channel? Are you willing to shove something in your nose? Then, all right, that's, there you go. That's it.
Yeah,
just like, shove shit in your nose once a week on YouTube, and you could achieve Socrates-level notoriety, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So I guess this brings me to, like, a question that ever since I read Zealot, I wanted to ask you, Reza, and Rain, I'd love to know, too. Like, where are you all at now with God, the conceptualization of God, the idea of, like, the divine? And, you know, is the fame thing and the furious desire for that just a replacement for a kind of increasingly diluted, I don't know, I don't want to say, like, we've lost our spirituality, but definitely, like, I mean, the people's perception or conceptualization of God now compared to, you know, many different phases of human history is so different. What, you know, there's nothing feeding people in the way, for better or for worse, that it used to feed people. So where are y'all at with that? Do you pray?
Yeah, I pray. I know Rain prays. I pray less formally than I think I used to. I think my views on God have both muddied and matured at the same time, you know, which I think is supposed to be the way that's how it's supposed to be, right? You grow up, you get more mature, your mind expands, you realize you don't know what you thought you know, and you start to doubt things. That's supposed to be what happens to you as you get older and smarter. I a couple of years ago wrote this book called God. And I had originally intended the book to just be kind of a straight up history of God, the origins. Where did the concept of God arise? How did it evolve? You know, where will it go in the future? That's how I pitched the book to the publisher anyway. But then I started working on the early stuff. Like, where did this concept of God arise? And the more I began to study it, the more this kind of shocking revelation occurred to me, which is that human beings have this involuntary impulse. We all do it, whether you believe in God or not, in which we construct our conception of God as essentially a divine mirror of ourselves. We construct God to have our politics, our emotions, our attributes, our likes and our dislikes. In fact, we construct God to have our face. There was an amazing study done in 2012. This is something that psychologists and cognitive theorists of religion have known for a long time. It's just kind of how our brain works. And that's why you can go back hundreds of thousands of years and look at the earliest conceptualizations of God. And even at the very start of all of this, God is anthropomorphized. God has arms and legs and a head, you know, and God likes the things we like and hates the things we hate. He has our attributes, you know, our virtues and our vices. But a group of scientists at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, decided to actually put this theory to the test. And they got 500, in this case, there were 500 Protestant Christians. And they asked them a very simple question, which is, what does God look like? And they showed them a series of just kind of bland images of human beings. And they were supposed to kind of, you know, whatever, more plus, more minus, more plus, more minus. And then in doing so, they were able to create a composite for each person of what God looked like.
And this is the study where God for everybody looked like Rain,
and
right?
Everyone looked
really weird. God forbid.
Rain circa 2012. Like, you know, not 2021.
early.
Well, no, 2012 was when Steve had left the show. The office was in decline. So
Rain. But of course, what they discovered is darker skinned people created a darker skinned god. Lighter skinned people created a lighter skinned god. Right. Women created a more feminine god. Men created a more male god. But then it got really weird. Republicans, self-described Republicans, created a much more muscular, masculine god. Liberals and progressives created a far more feminine and effete god. We create a divine being who is just us, but without kind of human limitations, right? So as I – that ended up being what the book was about. It wasn't at all what I thought the book was going to be about, but that's what it was about. And when it was finished, I just – I really had to kind of think to myself, how have I been thinking about God? How have I been approaching God? Have I even been praying to God? I've been praying to God as though God is just some kind of divine version of me, you know, that he even gives a fuck about the things that I care about. And I went through this process where I really had to consciously strip my view of God of all human elements and kind of return to a more primal conception of the divine as just pure creative force. And I will be honest, it did make – the reason that we turn God into a person is that we can have a relationship with God. You know, God, this way we can actually know God because he's a person. He's just like us. God, he's just like us. But what the that process created, I think, a more – as I say, a more muddled relationship with God. But it also, I think, created a more mature relationship for me with God. So I'm in a kind of a, you know, I'll just be honest and a little vulnerable here. I'm kind of in a transitional moment here with my relationship to the divine. It's shifted over the last few years.
I mean, I'm seeing on yourself there, it seems like you have a was that Hanuman back
I got the whole panoply, man. I got Ganesha over here. I got Hanuman up there. Somewhere around here.
And I can't remember the lion that is that the lion that Krishna turned into or the Vishnu turned into?
No, that's from Thai Buddhism. It's
Scar from Lion King.
Okay.
It is.
Well, that was based on the lion. Yeah. Vishnu.
The Lion King is just a big Buddhist metaphor.
Yeah. What about you, Rain? And obviously, answer this.
It's weird. Not too weird. It's my favorite question
It really is his favorite thing to talk about.
I'm writing a book right now, and God features quite prominently in it. I'm writing a book on spirituality, which is very weird for a former sitcom actor. But
cool.
I really relate to so much of what Reza said, because more and more as I mature, I try and separate God in every way, shape, and form, as far away from the idea of an old white man on a cloud looking down and granting us a good parking space. You know, my mom, as I got back to know my mom, she'd be like, okay, pray for a good parking space. And like everyone say, oh God, get me a good parking space right by the theater. And I really don't think that that's how God works. So as I, let me back up a little bit and say, I tried being an atheist. I really did. I gave it my best shot. Yeah. I grew up a member of the Baha'i faith. I left the Baha'i faith when I was about 19 or 20, moved to New York City to become an actor. And I did a hard turn against anything having to do with spirituality. It was soft and for weak people and people that needed to believe in God or people that needed a comfort blanket and they needed a sky daddy to give them hugs. And it was for grandmothers. It wasn't, you know, it had nothing to do with me. I was a cutting edge artist. You know, I wanted to be Lou Reed. And I tried it really hard. And then I was miserable, number one. It wasn't working. And also, I just kept, you know, Reza was talking about Descartes earlier. Like, I kept trying to wrap my mind around this infinitely large and infinitely beautiful universe that we live in. And that it all came together randomly through molecules bumping into each other. And I just couldn't do it. I couldn't be in the world without there being some kind of like greater force, meaning, purpose above and, you know, within us, but and outside of us and above us and beyond us and without any limitation of time or space. And so, but what I'm trying to do more and more is, like Reza said too, is think of God as love. Think of God as beauty. You know, think of God as truth. That God, I imagine, this whatever this force is, this creative, loving force that is providential toward all of its creation, human and otherwise, that this force wants something from us, and it gives us purpose and not purposelessness. That God is much closer to, let's say, beauty than God is to an entity, you know, who has like a will and a brain, and like, I'm going to make these people suffer from this hurricane, and I'm going to make these people have a good crop harvest this year, but anything remotely like that. What about you, Duncan?
Right. Yeah.
You go.
Oh, yeah. I love bhakti yoga. I love, like, and I think that what both of you are saying is like the most brilliant way one of the most brilliant ways to connect with God. But I just out of a kind of like, I don't know, I love thinking of God as a person, though a lot of times I don't, and I pray for anything, but I try not to do the parking spot thing. You know, I like, I don't remember who it was, Thomas Merton maybe said the only prayer is thy will be done. Like, and the math behind that's real good. Real good, because like if we're talking about some progenitive super intelligence, what are you going to tell it what to do? You know, you're going to tell us some super consciousness how to behave, and the way you're telling it to behave is like shit, like parking spaces. You know, that being said, I try to understand it. I like bhakti yoga. I like the stories of Krishna. I'm a new dad. Being around my kids helped me understand there are like the ideas of like God sometimes appears to you as your child, not literally, but you know, this idea of like that's pure love. So I zing around all the time, and then every once in a while I'll just be like, fuck all that, and go into like deep Buddhist impersonalism, you know, deep, just like it doesn't, like I don't even know if I'm a thing, much less there being anything else. So I don't know. I tried being an atheist when I was much, much, much younger, and it didn't work. I love praying. It just feels good. Even if it is a comfort blanket, fuck it. We're being aerosolized by time. What are we supposed to be doing? Like walking around flexing?
Well, we had something. You know, we had a just really interesting. So for our podcast, Metaphysical Milkshake, some of the things we do is we hear from listeners and viewers like you, and people will call in and leave their questions or their comments on whatever topic. And we were talking with the great Pete Holmes, who you must know and vibe with.
Yeah, sure.
You cut from the same cloth, similar cloth. And this guy was saying, well, I'm an atheist, and I think that people make up God, you know, to give themselves comfort. But then he said, this viewer said, but that's okay, because we all need to find meaning in this world where, you know, we're going around the sun 60, 70, 80, 90 times, and then that's it. And whatever gives us the most kind of meaning, connection, hope, then that's fine. So this was a very, like, as opposed to the angry atheist that it just seems to have been religiously traumatized as a youth and is like, argh! You know, this was a very, like, loving atheist. Like, I'm an atheist. I think it's a fabrication. But if people want to make that fabrication, it gives them hope. So be it. God bless you. Godlessness bless you.
I think that's it's sad. Like, atheists have definitely been saddled with this stereotype that just comes from the most angry, loud social media people out there. Like, a lot of most of the time when you run into many Buddhists, you would, for lack of a better word, you have to call them atheists. I mean, there's non-theistic at the very least. So okay, I'm sure you both have, I'm guessing you both have had your eyes on this new resurgence. I don't know if you'd call it a resurgence, but suddenly from like mainstream media, we're getting all these UFO stories, UAPs as they call them now. Any thoughts on it? Any insider data? Reza, why do I feel like you know something?
We're obsessed with this. In fact, we have a podcast episode coming up later in the season with the Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb, who is one of the more sort of eloquent voices arguing that not only are extraterrestrial beings real, but that they've actually visited. And, you know, we, again, I don't know if either Raiden or I have like a definitive take on this. I mean, for me, my whole point is the one that you hear all the time, which is, number one, what kind of bizarre, you want to talk about solipsism, like what kind of bizarre fucking solipsism thinks that these 8 billion beings are the only intelligent beings in a universe that it defies, you know, our every description of it. The question, though, is not is there intelligent life out there. I think the only reasonable response is yes. The question is, have they been here?
Right.
And Rain brought up, we were just kind of shooting the shit about this a little while ago, and Rain brought up something, I don't even know if he remembers, but I remember it. Where, am I getting this right, Rain? Where you were like, there's only two reasons to come here,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of those is to you know, conquer, and
yeah,
and the other is to study, I guess, you know, in order to conquer. I'm not actually, it's a long. The right. Bottom line, it's a long way to go, just to kind of, you know, probe a few anuses and then head back home. So I think maybe
how many times does that get said on any given
like
night?
Like it's a long,
It wasn't worth
wherever
the drive.
They are. There are anuses there. So you
maybe
know,
there's not. Maybe we're the only planet in the galaxy, in the universe, where anuses developed. And that's why they're so fucking obsessed with the human anus.
So I guess we are.
I mean, maybe like other planets, they just regurgitate their waste, you know, or it seeps out of their pores, or they just only eat enough.
Are you saying that's why they're here? Just to
yes.
kind of see like, what
yeah.
is this thing? It's an exit?
It's like the spice
yes.
in Dune.
It's like the yes, spice in Dune, only instead of the spice, it's the human anus. Yeah, but they're either here.
So yes, I think that they're out there. I'm not sure if they've come here.
But here's the deal. Why do they want to be seen so much? Number one, why do they have different shaped ships? Because there's definitely cigar ships and saucer ships. And yes. some triangle mm-hmm. ships too, yes. some pyramid
There's
ships.
Some triangle ones. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like different cars. Yep. Maybe it's like a Lexus and a Honda and a Hummer. You know, I don't know. But
yeah.
if
yeah.
they are observing us, why don't they just observe us from the dark side of the moon and just like poke a telescope around and surface and check out our radio right. signals and like listen to Rush Limbaugh and watch HGTV and kind of figure out mm-hmm. what the human species is all about? Some Bollywood musicals
they
thrown
are
in.
Being pretty
what
obvious.
Do you think? Yeah. They're definitely showing.
Yeah,
up
I mean,
they
want to be seen. Why do they want to be seen? But if it was invasion, they would have done that a long time ago. Unless the other thing is too, the reason that they're observing us is because they planted us here in the first place. So, the old ancient alien visitors and the ancient semen, you know, aliens bred with apes and created human beings. So we're their offspring, and they're checking in on us. And you know what? We're not doing very well.
You heard it here, folks.
Well, yeah, that's a speculation, too. Some people, like the accelerationists, have you ever heard this insane idea, which is we actually go the opposite direction. We accelerate towards the apocalypse because that will, you know, if there is some beings like that, they're gonna show up. Also, have you heard the term... it's not ex. It's the idea is they're not from. It makes more logical sense that they're from the Earth than they're from outer space. That and so it's this idea that they're sort of they've been here for a long time, just sort of observing. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get too far into that. I was just thinking because both of you probably have some access to data. I'm surprised someone hasn't reached out to tell you what it is. what's coming. Yeah. The report is on the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so we only have a few more minutes. Both of you are like, I guess for lack of a better word, like, I don't know what to call, would you call yourselves activists? You're very public and about your views, and your views that you're public about it, behind it, you just sense this deep intention that you want to help. You want to help. Has it all, two parts of the question. One, have you always had that feeling, or as you started like experiencing, as your career started blowing up, did you start thinking like, oh, I've got a responsibility. I have to do something because people are listening. And the final part of the question is, can you give some actual, like, real world direction to folks out there who would like to take that leap from being a sort of bystander of the apocalypse to being someone who's maybe helping it, you know, or helping forestall it?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Great and important question. Thank you for asking it. And I definitely always volunteered my time and, you know, helped, you know, teach and volunteer at schools, the Harvey Milk School in Manhattan, and
even in your Lou Reed phase,
I always was doing that. But when you, who were going back to fame again, all of a sudden when I became famous on The Office, I was just inundated with like, hey, will you MC our event? Will you be on our board? Will you lend money? Will you give money? Will you be our spokesperson? Will you do this commercial? Will you fly here and see what we do? And I realized like, oh shit, I better figure my shit out. And so I did a deep dive, as I like to do, about philanthropy and how it works and giving back and making the world a better place. And what I arrived at is that the thing for me that is more important than anything else is education. Because, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't have a career if I didn't have education, if I didn't have certain teachers in the right place at the right time helping me. And as I did an even deeper dive into the world of education, I started working with some nonprofits. One was called the Mona Foundation. I realized, too, that all of the research in education is all about girls' education. So educating girls, teenage girls, but, you know, girls from 10 to 20 years old, is the number one way to reduce poverty and to uplift communities. Begin grassroots movements, because when you educate a girl, girls are connected to community and they obviously raise their babies with what they've learned, literacy or what have you, but they also share it with their sisters and aunts and their cousins and villages. And so you educate a girl, you're educating 100 people. So my wife and I started a nonprofit in Haiti that we work on a lot. I mean, we spend a good, you know, 10 hours a week each just as board members on this nonprofit. And we have about 40 Haitian employees and we're in about 13 locations with educating 800 girls. We've taught hundreds of girls to read and given dozens of scholarships.
Wow.
With this is called Lide Haiti. But I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I would just say that begin the process of activation with whatever speaks to you in your heart, dear listener of the Duncan Trussell Comedy Family Hour. And comedy.
No comedy, just
the comedy
family
back
hour.
In.
Nothing is funny about
I'm
this.
I'm putting the comedy back into the Duncan Trussell. Duncan Comedy Trussell and his family hour.
Oh, God damn it.
And find what makes you come alive and go do that thing. You know, what inspires you, start down the path, however small. It will grow. It will. The trickle will turn into a mighty river because there is something uniquely profound and human about our ability to give to one another and to serve one another. It redoubles our happiness. It is a cure for depression. It is a cure for anxiety. It is a cure for disconnectedness. It all lies in giving to others. And this is a universal credo in every religious system. And I just... start however small you want to do it and let it grow.
Hare Krishna.
Amen.
Thank you.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's how Rin and I met. We met because we were both doing an event to bring attention to the plight of the Baha'i in Iran. Most people know Rin is a Baha'i and I'm Iranian, so it's kind of a natural connection there. Rain is probably sick and tired of hearing me say this because I say it like at least once an episode. But I truly believe that you are what you do. We all have a sense of who we are. You know, we all talk about maybe, you know, the values that we hold here, the morals that we have. Values and morals are shit if they're not put into practice in the world, right? They're not really values or morals, are they? You know,
right.
If it's just something that you believe in the privacy of your own mind, then it's useless. It's monastic. It's masturbatory. True spirituality is about works, not about faith. So my wife is a very sort of world-renowned social entrepreneur. She created something called Kiva, which has, you know, lifted literally millions of people around the world out of poverty. And she and I always have this thing where it's like, you know, we're from different religious backgrounds, we're, you know, different culturally, different ethnicity, but we share the exact same values. And those values are, in a sense, our faith and our identity. You know, it's the thing that binds us together. And we both believe that, you know, as the book of James in the Bible says, my favorite verse, faith without works is dead. So it's not about like being an activist. Like, I'm going to be an activist. It's who I am. It's figure out who you are and what you believe, and then put those things out in the world. Otherwise, it's not really who you are.
God bless both of you. Thank you so much for this wonderful hour. I'm just so excited that you both decided to come on the show. Metaphysical Milkshake, folks. This is on YouTube. Is it, but do you have an RSS feed or is it just?
Oh yeah, it's RSS. It's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever fine podcasts. Or if you want to watch us have the conversation, which seems silly, but some people like to do that, then we're also on the YouTubes.
Yeah, you can find our YouTube channel, Metaphysical Milkshake. If, again, for some reason you want to watch us talk, which I guess people do.
I like watching it. We like watching you. We love you, Rain.
We love you.
We love you.
We love you, Dwight.
We love you. We love you. Oh, you guys are the best. I do love you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy. Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you, Duncan.
Howdy, howdy.
Okay. That was Rain Wilson and Reza Aslan. Subscribe to Metaphysical Milkshake. A tremendous thank you to Upstart and BetterHelp and Squarespace for supporting this episode of the DTFH. And thank you for listening. I love you. This is a two-podcast week. We're going to be back tomorrow with DTFH favorite artist, Mystic Robert Ryan. Until then, I'll see you tomorrow or the next day. Hare Krishna. Here's a little bonus. It's the title track from Rex Reed's Crystallized Piss album, Lady of the Lake. Enjoy.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.